As the private label segment continues to expand, we're seeing growth across a host of categories from food and beverage to home products and apparel. Among the categories that have seen strong growth in recent years is wine. Grocers such as Albertsons and Aldi each have brought to market assortments of private label wine, and more could be on the way. Welcome to Store Brand Spotlight. I'm Greg Sleater, Executive Editor of Store Brands. Joining me today to talk more about the world of private label wine is Katarina Axelson, CEO of Tastry, and Charles Slocum, Chief Business Officer at Tastry. Katarina and Charles, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Greg, for having us.
Thank you, Greg.
It's good to have you both here, and it's my pleasure to talk about a category that is definitely seeing some more activity, and one that is, I guess, somewhat intriguing, especially as we're seeing some grocers and some others kind of take a look at wine and see where they can offer consumers good quality products at a good value. So Katarina, as we start, I wanted to ask you just to give us an overview of Tastry and what the company is and what it does.
Yes. So at Tastry, our tagline is, we taught a computer how to taste. We're a vertically integrated consumer insights software company in the wine and soon to be alcoholic beverage industry. And what we do with you, depending on if you're a winery, a retailer, or a distributor, is we give you visibility, predictive visibility on how much consumers are going to like which products before you invest, years and a lot of money in making them. So a winery is interested in making the right wine for consumers, and the retailer is interested in selling the right wine to the right consumers. So same data, same technology, just applied in different ways.
Charles, over the past decade, sales of private label wine have about doubled and now account, I think, for about 10% of total sales. Can you give us an overview of what's driving this growth?
Well, I think there are a lot of things driving that growth. Clearly, the desire to drive down or to drive up margins has been a large driver in that initially. But I think that what we see a lot is two other factors that are coming into play. One is that the younger consumer, particularly in beverage alcohol, is less brand loyal than they used to be. And they're looking for more differing, more eclectic experiences. And so the retailers are really striving to create those experiences, not unlike, say, craft beer or RTDs have gotten a lot of traction recently. The wine industry is trying to lean into that. It's difficult for the wine industry because wine production is expensive and it's more time consuming. I think that's a primary focus. Also, I think we do see retailers that aren't just shooting for margin. They're looking to put a higher quality product at a lower price, and they can utilize some of that margin to make the consumers happier and drive brand loyalty. And so I see those as probably the primary drivers.
I want to touch on the brand loyalty for a second. And when I think of spirits and I think of beer, those two categories have some longstanding brands, national brands that, my grandfather drank, my father drank, now I drink, and it's a sort of a generational thing. Does wine have that same thing, or is the brand loyalty less impactful, if you will, within the wine segment?
No, I think it's very similar. But I think what you see with craft beer and RTDs, you see a shift. You have a huge segment of craft beer that's coming in, and I think that's largely catering to the younger clientele. The old model used to be, as you stated, right? You find Mondavi and you buy Mondavi forever, and that's your wine. Or you find Budweiser, right? That type of thing. The younger the generations, they're looking for more eclectic experiences. They don't want the same thing all the time. So there's a little bit of a generational shift in what they're looking for. And we see that in our data. They do expect, though, high quality. So it's not okay to just come out with something different. And it's not okay to expect them to try something they're not going to like. They want to buy with confidence that they're going to like what they're buying, but they want to see change. The brand loyalty we see today is a little bit different in that there is brand loyalty, but it's a little more fleeting. So it used to be brand loyalty to a brand because, you know, you had a great experience, let's say, in the wine industry at a tasting room and you met the winemaker, and that drives that. Today, there are social issues. There are, you know, is the winery participating in regenerative farming? Are they organic? Those types of things. And those loyalties are, you know, minority winemakers. Those types of things can drive brand loyalty, but we don't see that brand loyalty persisting for year over year over year. It's a brand loyalty that exists for a while, and then something else comes along and they have a different loyalty. So brand loyalty is important, but it's not as persistent as it used to be.
Kat, question for you. When we see retailers now growing some, as I mentioned, Albertsons and Aldi are growing their private label assortments, and I'm sure there are others right now watching what they're doing and looking at those opportunities. When you talk about I guess the advantages, and Charles touched on a couple of them, but can you dive a little deeper into the advantage for a retailer in carrying a private label assortment of wine?
Yeah. I mean, there's several. I would say the most obvious one is the retailer understands their consumers and who they're selling to better, and it's a lot easier to close the loop and understand that better, right? So I feel like the feedback loop just makes that whole process more efficient if the retailer is involved in the, you know, making of the wine. And I feel like to answer this question a little bit better, I kind of have to explain this concept that we have, you know, told all of our clients from the very beginning, which is if you want a wine that every single person likes in the store or in the country, you get water. Like, that's a very big saying at Tastry. And the concept is most wines that have a mass appeal are less distinctive. So the retailer can much more easily find a sweet spot between an appealing wine and a distinctive wine. So, right, the more the consumers like a wine, the less likable it is, right? But the retailer can figure out exactly what the white spaces are on the shelf and kind of optimize for that. So they'll get a better, more interesting wine for the consumers that are coming in their stores and drinking their wine.
Charles, from the standpoint of the growth that we have seen, is there any specific group or demographic that's, you know, driving sales of private label wines?
Among end consumers?
Yes.
Yes, I would say, well, I would say it's leaning heavily towards the younger drinkers, for sure. But it's not ubiquitous at all. I think that as the wine category has expanded, you know, I think some of us on this podcast might remember when there were half a dozen bottles in a store of wine or a dozen bottles. Mm-hmm. And that was a long time ago. And now, you know, there might easily be 1,000 bottles of wine on the shelf. I think that to Katarina's point, actually ties together what she was saying. The goal for a long time was, well, look, we need wines on the shelf that a lot of people will like, because we have to market them to everybody. So we need as high a participation rate in every single label as possible. And so you've ended up with what I think wineries, winemakers, retailers, and consumers all agree. I mean, everybody agrees that the typical competitive set of wine in retail is not very eclectic. It's not necessarily as interesting as it could be, because they're really designed to be, you know, something that most people can drink. So I think there's been a desire partially driven by younger drinkers, but I think also even the older drinkers, I think, are looking for more eclectic, more interesting selections. And that's forcing retailers and wineries to figure out how do we do that and not break the bank. You know, how do we create more interesting, unique, as Katarina said, distinctive products, which are necessarily going to appeal to fewer people, any given product, but the people who are attracted, who do like those products, are going to rate them much higher, right? They're going to be much, much better match to their palates. And so the key is, how do you find those consumers and market the right wine to the right consumer at the right time? If you can do that effectively, if I can market to 15% of consumers, and I know that 10% of them, two-thirds, are going to like that product, my ROI is very good on my marketing. I've got to get away from I'm marketing every wine to every consumer with a 5 or 10% success rate, because then that makes it very expensive.
It's interesting. Kat talked about, the need, the retailers that know their customers well. And then Charles, you kind of evolved that into the uniqueness of offering something that's unique and maybe a little different. I would think that's kind of be music to a retailer's ear because so many retailers know their customers well. We've all got the shopper cards. But they're also looking for proprietary products that only they carry and keep people coming back. Wine would seem to be that great opportunity to where, hey, they've got this type of varietal or flavor or whatever it is, and I can only get it there. And that would be something that would ring in my ears as a buyer.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm sorry, Kat, was that question for you or?
Yeah, no, I was just going to just make a distinction there. And I wanted to comment on how this new generation of, consumers are not as brand loyal. So they do demand a positive experience. But what we have seen is I wouldn't hang your hat on launching a successful label and then expecting that customer to be a customer with you for the rest of their life. I just wanted to point it out because it seems like, the wine industry is a little bit resistant to that idea still.
Gotcha. Kat, for retailers that are looking at this category right now and how do I get into it? What do I do? Is there a blueprint that they should be following?
I would say, so that's exactly what Tastry does. What we do is we take the guesswork out of crafting the wines, and we don't just, work with a winery or a retailer to throw some wine into a bottle and hope it sells. We reduce the, an 85% or something failure rate when launching a new CPG or FMCG type product. And that's because we know what's in the bottle and we are focused on the consumer having a very positive experience the first time they buy the wine. And that just makes your, ROI for acquiring that customer go way up because you can sell something to anyone once, right? But are they going to come back and buy it again? Are you going to get the ROI on them? So, I would say the blueprint is, can you have a consumer-centric approach in product development, and what data could you use to mitigate the risk of investing a lot of time and money in launching a product that has a high failure rate?
And Charles, when retailers roll out anything new, they obviously always wanted to go perfect and there are always tweaks they have to make. But are there some obvious speed bumps that they should look to avoid as they develop private label wines?
Yeah, I think that they need to be competitive with you need to be competitive with the big producers, right? And as far as quality and the approach to the market. And I think that, again, that's what we try to do here at Tastry. A large retailer that is engaging in private label, there's a lot of money involved. They have a huge potential revenue that they can acquire if they do that well. And they have the resources to execute that relatively well. As the retailer gets smaller and smaller, they have fewer of those resources. And so what Tastry does is try to provide those resources for big and small. And so the speed bumps are when you're choosing how are you identifying what needs to be in your private label assortment against that bigger set of brands that you're carrying, number one. So you need to make sure that you're making the right decisions there. Number two, who's making the wine for you and what is the direction that winemaker has? Does the winemaker have very good visibility on your consumer and what you need in the bottle, not what the other retailer needs in the bottle? And then three, can you execute that quickly and efficiently? So, private label, as an example, that whole process can take 3 to 6 months, even sometimes up to 1 or 2 years in kind of a typical application. At Tastry, from first contact with a retailer that says, hey, I'm trying to do this, what should I do? We can provide visibility to the retailer, turn around, identify the wineries and the winemakers that can craft what they're looking for, and turn that around into a sample in a week, 10 days. So it's very quick process, very efficient, which makes it much more, for the retailers all the way down to small grocery stores or restaurants, for the retailer, for those types of retailers that don't have people whose full-time job is to deal with private label year over year, it makes it affordable for them to actually engage in that in an intelligent way.
I would like to add something before we move on, if that's okay.
Go right ahead.
Yeah. So we've been what Charles said is right. We have been talking about making an eclectic assortment, right? Not selling, you know, dog food to people who don't have dogs, right? And in this case, it's what consumer preferences and, you know, leaning into a more distinctive label and brand. That, you know, we have successful use cases for this concept, this idea. This is the ideal scenario for making private label wine. But I also wanted to point out there's still a traditional approach here, you know, that needs to be rethought is what we're seeing. And what I'm talking about is when we talk to our winery clients, right, about private label, about making a wine, they have this idea that they people want them to be making copycats. Right. When they go to buyers in retail, the buyers say, I want you to make me a lookalike, a wine that is so similar to the leading Chardonnay brand, right, in the U.S. Make this wine. And so they're just trying to copy what's already on the shelf, right, and maybe offer a better price point to it. And that seems to be still kind of like the status quo. But the challenge with that is it's, you know, it's not super accurate or it could be more successful, and you have an agricultural product, you have a different terroir, right? You have different chemistries every year that's changing. And you don't have the brand recognition either. And I think everyone's just kind of trying to do that because that's the best approach that they have known about to date. What we have seen is more successful is when you could look at the wine and understand the uniqueness of that particular wine. And instead of targeting the same flavors, you target the consumers. And so it could be a completely different brand, right? It could be like, okay, there's this cab that my consumers like. I want to sell them a Chardonnay that the consumers that like this cab like, right? So I'm just trying to make the distinction. It's not a wine style comparison. But what you're doing is you're giving consumers a low risk way to explore more wines just by targeting them. I don't know if that makes sense because we haven't done a demo to Tastry. And what that allows you to do is actually make a more appealing wine and a more distinctive wine at the same time, because you're leaning into the possibilities of your particular wine. Hope that made sense. If not, Charles, you can clarify, but.
Well, I think what you're just pointing out is that at Tastry, we start with the consumer. So instead of saying, hey, let's copy an existing brand label on the shelf, which is never going to, it's never a great solution, because even if you make the exact same wine, it's the same wine. And that never happens. It's generally kind of a faint shadow of the wine that you're trying to copy. It's much better to look at those consumers and say, hey, what would they love in, say, a Chardonnay? Let's find the winemaker that can build that Chardonnay, that can craft that Chardonnay, and provide a unique flavor profile that your consumers are going to like. As again, maybe the consumers in Texas aren't going to like it, but your consumers in Delaware are going to love that product. Let's build that. Let's build that wine. Let's craft that wine so that you have the highest consumer satisfaction possible, instead of just copying somebody else's product or trying to do that.
And I really wanted to bring up that point, because when we first, you know, started working with brands and retailers, we would often get the question, well, if we do this, if we craft these wines, isn't every wine going to be the same? And the answer is, it's the exact opposite. That's what everyone is already trying to do, because they don't see a better path forward. Because when you have a golden goose and something that's successful, you want to maintain that, right? You don't want to mess with the successful formula. The problem is that goes stale and stagnant over time. And there's no reason to do that if you can see in the data what is a more successful, you know, reality that you can lean into that might be a little bit different from what's currently on the shelf.
And Kat, I'm glad you brought that up, because I think the conversation that we have heard over the last 2 years, I think, within private label, as various outside factors from the pandemic to inflation have driven more consumers to buy store-branded products, is that retailers now are looking at not just being a national brand equivalent or a Me Too item, but they want to develop something that is unique for them, unique to what their customers want. So I'm glad you brought that up, because so it sounds like the retailers who are looking at wine need to kind of have that same thought and thinking, we just don't want to knock off to what's on my shelf, but I want to bring something different. So it sounds like the retailer needs to change that mindset a little bit.
Yeah, they can, and it would dramatically accelerate, you know, the success of private label. And I think the wine industry overall is, if people stop asking for copycats and stop going for the Me Too product. And I think the only way to make that happen is to show, you know, demonstrate that there is a more successful product you can make that fits your white space. So yes, I agree. The retailers, you know, the wineries are the vendor for the retailers making the private label, and they're, you know, they're going to do what the retailer wants them to do, right? So the retailer has a lot of influence in changing this dynamic.
So message to our retail friends in the audience, listen to your vendors. They may know what they're doing. And also what's interesting is that the retailer can bring to the vendor the information on their customers. You know, here's what our customers buy. Here's where, how they shop. Where's there an opportunity for us? So I think, again, the partnership thought process could lead to some real success there. So that's very interesting.
Yeah, Greg, that's interesting you mentioned that, because that's exactly right. So private label for a long time, you know, it really has been, hey, we want a private label product. Some vendor shows up and says, well, here's what I have. That, unless you are one of the largest providers that can actually drive that and has a team of people that has the data to actually drive that process, it's largely been kind of a pick and choose kind of approach. And, you know, you have some small team of people at the retailer that, or one person sometimes that tastes the wine, and then, you know, they're deciding that, yeah, I think people will like this. What Tastry does is provide visibility. Fundamentally, what we do is we show the retailer, hey, this is what your consumer is looking for, your consumers particularly. And then we convey that information. We show that information in a way a retailer can understand that data. And then that data is transferred to, we can find, or the retailer can say, hey, I work with a private label provider. We then work with the winery team, and we can convey what that means to the winery. So the winery, you know, and that doesn't mean, oh, they want a Chardonnay that's crisp and bright and kind of these subjective terms. We actually present to the winery team chemistry. And we say, like, this is what this wine needs to look like. So that when the, so now the winery team actually understands what that consumer is looking for, that retailer is trying to sell to. And then the winery team can craft that wine specifically for those consumers and then bottle it. And so making that fast and efficient. That's something that a lot of very, very large retailers, they spend millions of dollars a year doing that process. And that's something that we can do in days for all of those clients, right, across that ecosystem. So that's kind of the key, is providing visibility on that process and doing it well.
And staying with the consumers for a second, because ultimately we're trying to get the consumers to buy these products. When in general, as they shop for wine, is there an overlap of behaviors and how they shop and what they look for that retailers need to be aware of?
I would say when it comes to wine right now, right, and the whole industry is talking about, why is the younger demographic not buying our products? Why are they going for spirits and cocktails and beer? And why are they forgetting about wine? And so it's really difficult to answer the question, because it seems like the current approach is unsuccessful. And wine is, it's stuffy. It's unapproachable. The wine industry is still trying to sell, you know, these point scores, which people my age think they're Weight Watchers points. I'm just saying, we're not really into, we're not into learning for hours and hours about the terroir that this wine came from, and learning about all the different wine styles and the many, many varietals just to drink a glass of wine, right? And it seems like that is expected of the consumer. And so they're like, I just want to have a cocktail with dinner and have a good time. And wine isn't as sexy as that alternative, the alternative categories. And I think the consumer is looking for just a easier way into this category, a simpler, more approachable, more fun way into this category. And it seems like, the wine industry needs to make more attempts to cater to them. And right now, it seems like the retailers to sell wine are still relying on the, 100-point scale for promoting wines. But what we're seeing now in the data is that there's really no correlation between the point score of a wine, right? A 90, 92-point wine, and how well it does in the market. I've even seen negative correlations because the consumer walking in the store buying that wine is not the critic rating the wine. There's a disconnect there. We have a solution for that and how to look at wines, but I just wanted to point out there needs to be a better solution.
Well, one thing that I would say, talking to our larger retail clients, is just to clarify that there's no correlation between the point score and this consumer satisfaction. There is a correlation between point score and sales. But what all the data science teams in the big retailers show is that just because it's a 90-point wine or a 92-point wine, they know there's no correlation between that and consumer satisfaction. Is that the consumer is actually going to like the wine? And sometimes there's a negative correlation. And so one of the things that we do at Tastry to help in this process is Tastry provides we have a recommendation solution. And the idea is that the second that private label wine hits the shelf that no one's ever heard of, now you've got to get people to pick up the bottle. How do you get them to pick it up and try it? You've put the effort and the energy into putting a really good wine in the bottle that you know that a certain percentage of your consumers are going to love. How do you get them to pick up the bottle? And so Tastry provides a recommendation system that is uses a lot of different technologies, and it's omni-channel. So it could be in-store, it could be a QR code, it could be on web, it could be through email, it could be all of those things. But the idea is as soon as that bottle hits the shelf, you're reaching out to your consumers in a compelling way, particularly reaching out to those individual consumers that you know are going to love that wine and marketing to those people. And the people that you have identified are not going to be great fans of that wine. We don't want to spend energy marketing them a wine that they're not going to like, right? So focus on the consumers that are going to love it, market that wine and move that wine, and then rinse and repeat, right?
And I'm assuming technology and our beloved iPhones and smartphones is probably one good way of doing that. My supermarket knows what I buy. I mean, on my app, I get mm-hmm. recommendations. Here's what you bought last time. Maybe you'd like to try this thing, So mm-hmm. again, if I'm a chicken eater or a steak eater, you would match a wine to what I'm buying and eating at home.
Well, that's mm-hmm. in fact something that Tastry does in grocery. We can, let's say a consumer, to your point, they're buying this meal kit and they pick up the Thai chicken salad meal kit and they love that meal kit. We can proactively see that in an integration with a retailer, and then we can pair that. The AI, Tastry AI, will pair that to a wine that will go well with that consumer would love. So they might pick up that Thai chicken salad, and then the AI might recommend to them, hey, there's this Sauvignon Blanc over in aisle 3 that's going to pair beautifully with that, and this is how much you're going to like it, and this is how much your wife is going to like it, or whatever, that type of thing. And By that means, you're kind of addressing what Katarina's talking about. How do we reduce the paradox of choice for the consumer when there's 1,000 bottles of wine on the shelf? Well, if you can say, hey, you're having this tonight, you should have this wine, you're going to really enjoy it, you can make that a very quick decision. And you can do that with a high degree of efficacy, then that's fantastic.